But in the protocol level, what we are trying to do is, first of all, on the product, I definitely want to deliver better experiences. But at the same time, with the protocol, we want to make sure whatever product you end up using, you ultimately have the say of your data. You can always exit. You can always go to other apps. And that makes the whole game different. The products can still compete to find the most users or the most useful use case, but they don't get to control the data. So they have to only compete on the experiences. In that case, ultimately, the user is going to benefit from that. We have to make sure all those data are open, decentralized, owned by the user and self-sovereign, portable. The choice is ultimately made by the users.
You have just heard from Yilan Huang, who leads global development across different regional markets at CyberConnect, Web3's earliest and biggest decentralized social network that enables developers to create social applications empowering users to own their digital identity, content, connections, and monetization channels. So let us dive right in.
So here we are, official day 3 of the WebEx conference. I'm here with Yilan from CyberConnect.
Yeah.
I've got a very cute Japanese tote bag here. On-chain friends last forever, that's the theme.
Yeah, friends forever.
So what does CyberConnect do?
We focus on social, the social decentralized social network protocol. We enable developers to build decentralized social apps or add social features into their decentralized apps so the users, in the end, can own their identity, their content, their connections, and move freely across different applications.
So you don't build your own Facebook, let's say? You build the platform that other people can build many Facebooks?
Yeah, in a way. CyberConnect itself is a protocol. And that's exactly what we mean by enabling developers to build apps on top of us. But you can also think of CyberConnect as logging with Facebook, but with the decentralized protocol. People can keep their identity and connections and friendships when they move to different places to play a different game so they can keep their friends with Facebook account. But now they're using CyberConnect account. So all the friends, all the data will be stored on the protocol and owned by the users. On top of the protocol, we have more than 50 projects, like day apps, already building using CyberConnect. They have a very diverse range of use cases. It's not just social media like Facebook or Twitter. It's also gaming, metaverse, or shopping, or even live streaming, or restaurant reviews since we're here. We're very excited about that, and that's also the real part about Web3 Social, is that it's not really about social media. Once we decouple the data, the social data from the social media application, we can put the data to any other different contexts, under every kind of contexts. So it will become a social layer below all those different contexts, as I mentioned.
If I do my restaurant reviews, yeah, my friends can see them in the same way I can find my friends on the gaming app, for example.
Yeah. If you opt to show that in different contexts, the baseline is all those comments, reviews, or content, they're owned by you as a user. And you have to say where I want to show it, where I want to take it, not by the platform.
In this concept of digital identity, do I have multiple digital identities that I show in different contexts, or do I have one base entity and then different flavors coming out from that?
That's a really nice way to put it. I would say people do both, especially in crypto. People have different accounts at different wallets for different purposes. As a social protocol, we definitely give the user-friendly feature, enable that to the users. You can keep your one holistic identity across different platforms, across different contexts. At the same time, you should be able to select the subgraph, the sub-identity you want, the flavor, you said, in different contexts. For example, you go to gaming, you would like to show your gaming side of yourself and your gaming friends in that gaming context. You go to a restaurant, you have different identity. So that will be the ideal case in the future. We're definitely working towards that. But for the moment, mostly, it's going to be one single holistic. We're still in the first phase of getting things together, and then we'll be able to move forward with two kind of like sub-identities according to contexts. And that will be done with, you know, ZK, to give you privacy, give you choices, and to selectively disclose information to your preferred parties.
Early stage and 50 apps already, so that's pretty good for a start. Your path to user activation is ultimately through the builders. So you need to get good apps built, and they will then onboard the end user, but you don't necessarily have a direct path.
That's a really crucial question, actually, for all protocols building, like in the whole history of the internet. In that go-to-market strategy, we're actually doing that both in two ways. We have more than 50 projects, but among all of them, there's one project built by ourselves. And that one is actually the flagship product in the whole ecosystem. It's called Link 3. Link 3, like Link Tree in the Web3 way. When we started with Link 3, it was an all-in-one profile with, you know, Web2 and Web3 content all together, verifiable, traceable, and also self-sovereign ownable connected to what address. We started growing beyond that to make it more like a distribution tool platform for organizations, for communities, for projects to engage with their users in a more professional context. Nowadays, there are more than 2,500 verified organizations, including BME Chain, 1inch, DYDX, Arbitrum recently. All those organizations using Link3 verified to engage with the users, like using the profile, using the event feature to host Web3 native Twitter spaces and to write articles and let the users to collect the articles, join the events, and be issued, you know, verifiable credentials, SBTs. That becomes a community hub for the organizers, for the projects to engage with their communities. And that is our flagship product. We have more than 800K monthly active users on the platform. And as I mentioned, there are 2,500 projects using that, directly engaging with the users. And that will be also very helpful in the very beginning of the protocol design and protocol development to have some initial users so we can feed back to the other projects and other developers in the ecosystem.
Link3 has also been a partner of WebEx Asia as a conference, right? I'm running Tokyo FinTech Community, which is on meetup.com currently. 3,600 people. I could take that and use Link3 to manage that in a Web3 way.
Yeah, it's not really about requiring you to migrate everything to Web3, to Link3, but it's actually like an extra enabler. You can still do your normal Twitter spaces or, you know, meetups, but you can use Link3 as an extra platform to engage with users in a more Web3 way. You can do both. It's very good to have. And also that's one of the things we can very easily help you to get in touch with more international user base as well and have a feeling of how Web3 social really works.
Interesting. We both met Anjali from Colabland, which conceptually sounded a bit similar, building these communities. As a person who's deep in this space, where do you see the differences? How do you do things differently than they do?
Specifically about Link3, right, on the product level, Link3 is still more of a tool and it's still very much focusing on very specific context as community engagement, which is events and also posts like articles. So we are only focusing on those two parts for now. Events is very special and also very interesting context or use case, right? People come for the event, they are here for the content. They are here to support the projects, support the community. They are also here to spend the time and space together with a group of other people. It's a very genuine, authentic social space as well, because you're spending time and space together with some other people. That says a lot about your choice or your preference and your taste in a way, or your value system. Based on that, there's a lot of interesting things can grow from there. For example, better relationships between professionals, better connections between community members, and maybe collaboration opportunities between different communities. And the community organizers or the project managers, they can tap into the context to know very well how their users engage with them, how long do they stay, what kind of topics do they really like, and how are they interacting with different other members as well. Web3 Social is not just about social media or social in general, but it has to find some very specific contexts where people really go with each other and find connections. That is one example we're trying to showcase. At the same time, it has a very subtle balance between a platform and a protocol. On a platform, on a product level, it makes sense to have one mega app that makes everything super convenient and every user just to be on that one thing. But at the same time, people are now really racing against that as well for the big companies, right? Because they don't really know how their data is going to be controlled or going to be used by those big companies. They don't have any say in it. They're not stakeholders. They're only users. The user is a very particular, interesting, and also sometimes ironic term to describe a person. Now you're only a user of your app, but you're not really a stakeholder or something more important. But in the protocol level, what we're trying to do is, first of all, on the product, I definitely want to deliver better experiences. But at the same time, with the protocol, we want to make sure whatever product you end up using, you ultimately have the say of your data. You can always exit. You can always go to other apps. And that makes the whole game different. The products can still compete to find the most users or the most useful use case, but they don't get to control the data or build, you know, moats around the data and become like a closed garden and become like incumbents. No one can come up with more innovative ideas. But now they don't get to do that on a data level, so they have to only compete on the experiences. In that case, ultimately, the user is going to benefit from that. Because everyone is going to compete on the experiences instead of the, you know, moats around the data as an asset for the corporates. We have to make sure all those data are open, decentralized, owned by the user and self-sovereign, portable. The choice is ultimately made by the users. For one, we're one of the biggest Web3 social dApps already. in the ecosystem and also in Web3 in general. But also at the same time, becoming so crucial to further support other apps in our ecosystem. It's not just about the app itself. We've been always talking about the vision, the narrative, interoperability, openness, you know, decentralization, self-ownership, self-sovereignty. But ultimately, the users are looking for experiences. And Web2 companies are super good at building good experiences, even though in a centralized way. And if there's decentralization or self-ownership or self-sovereignty without good experience, that's not going to work. Ultimately, people are here not for the ideology or just vision. They are here for something that can actually benefit from.
As a protocol, is there an incentive mechanism? Or is there tokenomics involved in what you're doing?
Yeah, we have a token. Actually, we just launched the token two or three months ago. We finished our public sale with the Coinlist. That was pretty successful, I have to say, and people are very hyped and the community are very excited. But the token for now is not really used as an incentive system within the protocol. It's more of a governance token, but it will have some utility in the next upgrades of the protocol. The cyber token will be gas payment token, and that will be a gas payment token for whatever chain you're opting to use. CyberConnect itself is a multi-chain protocol, so we don't only build on one chain. We already support, you know, Polygon, BME chain, Ethereum. Yeah, we're going to Arbitrum, you know, Optimism, Linear, and also Optimism BNB chain and some other ones. With the newest, you know, V3 upgrade, which was announced like 2 weeks ago, we're making a huge step towards the DID part, the decentralized identity part, but using account abstraction, the IP ERC 4337, we're making a multi-chain account system, and that is holistic, so you can have your account, have your identity across different chains. The ERC 4337 account abstraction also makes it much easier for users to get on board into Web3, so we can use social login. For example, they can just use their email address, phone numbers, or some other social accounts to log in and create a wallet or a wallet address like account system in Web3. They don't even have to know it's Web3. And then they can do social recovery, so they don't have to worry about key management that well. With the account abstraction, we can enable gas delegation, which means you don't have to really pay your own gas. Someone else is, you know, using Paymaster can pay for a gas, and you can pay with whatever, you know, currency you want to any native tokens in any chain. For now, we're using USDC as a gas credit. We can use USDC to pay you whatever gas, whatever chain. You don't even have to know what chain you're operating with. But in the future, it's going to be cyber token, and there will be discounts in the gas fees. So that is one key utility we're going to give to cyber token besides governance.
When we think about scalability, and you're going to be super successful, there are going to be 1 billion people on the protocol. Are you then depending on the underlying chains to scale accordingly? What is the limitation ultimately?
That's a question we've been thinking about since the very beginning in 2021. And that's also why we made a very significant decision in the very beginning. For the storage part, for the data part, we're using a hybrid approach of both on-chain and off-chain storage. If you're thinking about the scarce and valuable data, like your monetizable content, your identity, or maybe some very monetizable social connections, such as subscribers, we can enable you to do that on-chain. It can mean that as an NFT and also store it on-chain. Mm. But for those content which are more high frequency and less value and less scarce, more abundant, such as, you know, likes, comments, or maybe some just normal posts or tweets or something like that, I don't think they necessarily have to be on-chain, and it makes the whole user experience so much worse. So we give the option to the users and the developers to make their own choices about which part to put on-chain. In the situation right now, a lot of things have to be off-chain to make sure the user experience to be optimal. And the second one is we're using decentralized storage like, you know, IPFS and Arweave to put the things off-chain, so always people can do that in a more scalable way. Yeah, so in short, we've been thinking about scalability from the very beginning, because that's the key for social. Social by definition is a mass use case, and social is something that ultimately should be like a second nature instead of always transactions or financial incentives. Ultimately, with the rollups and also L2s, we'll definitely see also a huge potential with the chains as well. So we're definitely, you know, keeping an eye on that.
How do you have to think about this architecturally? Given that you're supporting multiple chains, do you have your own middle layer, middleware that abstracts from these different chains, and then your protocol runs on top of that middleware, or how have you built this?
In the V3, we're basically a set of like smart contracts, and using also a construction and ERC 4337, and using bundlers and paymasters, we're basically interacting with the different chains without building on top of one certain chain. So that is, you know, the general way of doing that. You can think of CyberConnect as a middleware itself, between chains. between storage and on top is applications and also like indexers or something like that. You probably touched on some point about the things that are scattered around different chains, right? Between the chains, they are not entirely interoperable and they have different, you know, ecosystem. So as a server connector itself, we are also acting with some rows of like indexer together. And we'll have to indexing everything from different chains together and map them onto the same server account, which is the DID. In the user interface, and when the developer is trying to tap into our resources, they will see everything together, indexes already, and all holistically together. They don't also have to care about where the data already existed from some other chains. They should only think about what they are going to be, which chains are they going to choose.
From a DID perspective, that follows the ERC
457, yeah.
Is that the standard that aligns with other DID efforts as well? Is that there's different standard bodies or different groups are working on making a certain standard for DID? And for me, it's not clear how they will be interoperable.
Actually, DID is a very fuzzy term. DID, when it was started, was a very generic term just for decentralized identity identifiers. That was proposed by W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium, the people who behind the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee, who proposed all kind of proposals for internet. When they did that, it was mostly just a schema to describe how should we altogether name an identity, which field we have to fill out. And so we can all understand like this person, this account has a name, has something, other properties. So that's a very simple proposal. But when we're talking about DID in a crypto sense, it's more about identity. It's like a proper account and something that you can own, something you can also use that to own some other content, some other connections, and or even assets or addresses. So in that front, ERC 4337 is the newest approach or solution that can really make things multi-chain for one and super easy onboarding and rivaling Web2 user experience. That is something I think it's gaining much more attention and more mainstream recently. Vitalik mentioned that in ECC last week as one of the big thing next coming up. But actually we announced our V3 upgrades before Vitalik announced that. So 4 days or 5 days before that. Now I'm very excited to share that as I'm speaking right now, we're actually becoming the biggest ERC 4337 abstraction smart contract account system in the whole network. Because we launched our V3 upgrades and we launched our V3 campaign together yesterday with Polygon and Linea. That is our first campaign in the series. And now we're gaining a lot of mass adoption of that account system, of that DID already. People have been talking about DID for a long time, also ERC, you know, 4337. The users, they don't get to know how exactly that feels. And we are among the first ones to really implement that into something you can actually use. You can actually create your account. You can actually use that to interact with apps in our system right away with social experiences. I think it works. And we're excited about the coming weeks to make it more mainstream. And most importantly, Web2 Social, it's not just about social. It's about really giving the social experiences that is much richer and much more friendlier than just the financial part of crypto to Web3. So people come here not anymore just for financial gains. They can come here for friendship. They can come here for connections. They can come here for chats. That is really exciting because we are, you know, together with our construction, the easier onboarding and easier network stretching, network complexity thing. We're actually really bringing the Web3 benefits to the mass people. That's something we think social can help a lot with. As a social protocol, we cannot only stay in the protocol layer as well, because ultimately we have to reach the users. We have to think ahead for and with the developers together, what exactly is going to be needed, what exactly going to be demanded, what exactly going to be useful and also like creative and also beneficial for the ultimate end users. And the end users shouldn't only be the crypto native OGs already in the space, but should be out there and already using LinkedIn or already using Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, but deserving something better.
Let's talk a bit about monetization of content. We talked about the idea and the data that I own and want to share in different contexts very differently. But then also the content that I produce, great content on Facebook or LinkedIn or so, ultimately these platforms monetize that on my behalf. How do you see that changing in the Web3 context and with all the applications that are being built on your platform?
That's a small group of people, but also the most important part of people of the user base as well, because they depend on that for their livelihood and they depend on that for their really important, you know, social connections and the social groups as well, right? So that's their community. From a protocol perspective, first of all, we'll give the ownership back to the creators, the KOLs, and also the, you know, the influencers. They definitely own their content and they can bring that to whatever the platform they want on the protocol. as I mentioned, at the same time, they have the choice to showcase part of the content. I think that would fundamentally change the economic model of all the products. Also, how the creators are interacting with the users, with the followers. One thing I think like would be a very good example to imagine in the future would be, instead of only a few very large creators earning a lot of money, having huge community follower base, huge platforms, there could be countless millions of small platforms with smaller communities. But at the same time, they're sustainable themselves. It's about matching the right people with the right content, and they have the freedom and they have the ability to form their own community and be sustainable there. That's the same of saying, you know, like 1,000 true fans. So as long as you have 1,000 true fans that can directly connect with you and can support you without the intermediary of the platforms or of the government or whatever the centralized entities who can change the rules arbitrarily and also can take a lot of shares from your community. Without that, as long as you can do that direct kind of relationship, there will be way more organic, you know, good content and good creators and good communities. And Web3 Social ultimately, I think, will be like that. This one part of it related to discovery and recommendation, that's actually the part where Web2 kind of goes wrong a little, because the platforms has all the power and also has all the data. So they decide what you can say. They divert your attention to something particular instead of your real interest. Think in a topological way. If I think about the web, in Web2, it was more like a scattered, like a closed gardens of different platforms. Here's a piece of land, there's a lot of users there. Here's another piece of land, but they're all close together. Sometimes they connect, but mostly they're closed. But nowadays, when we're going into Web3, it's more complicated, massive web of users. It's like all the nodes are users, but they're all directly connected with each other and also with the different content. Every single node of users is a valid and also meaningful entry point to that web. On top of that, we can build, you know, discovery engines or recommendation engines based on their identity, based on their preferences, without the limitation of the closed platforms, recommending them the right people, the right content across the whole internet directly, so they can form more direct and meaningful connections way easier than Web2. Based on that, they have the tools to build their communities, at the same time having the freedom to build more tools and build more communities and move away from those communities. In that sense, there will definitely be more relatively smaller communities compared to the bigger platforms, and there will be a lot of more niche communities as well, but they will also be able to find each other much easier. There will also be much easier to sustain themselves by monetizing their support and their data and their interests, because they are the one together, they are the hobbyists, and they are the true experts in the field. This whole bunch of new levels of vitality, synergy, and creativity, if you put the right people together. The underlying infrastructure is still open and connected together, and in a way, universal. When they want, they can still find each other. There's always, you know, new possibilities to be discovered. The more I talk about Web3 Social and also Web3 in general, the more I feel like that is exactly what the web originally was envisioned to be. Yeah. A bunch of hobbyists across the globe and trying to find each other and trying to do something great together, make it open and make it decentralized and make it fun. I was at the D-Web camp. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's like decentralized web. It's like an NGO kind of organization. They have like different nodes across the world. Every year in summer, they host a D-Web campsite in the woods north of San Francisco. And the DIY people are mostly the people who are from the internet era, like the internet ethos. They don't necessarily use blockchain or crypto, but they do definitely always work on decentralization and also the open internet part of it. This time, actually, Tim Berners-Lee also came as well in the camp, and all different OGs from the 80s or 70s, they're there as well. But at the same time, on the other end, you have 15-year-old who just get started to code. So you see four or five generations of people coming together, still keeping building on that open, decentralized internet web kind of vision. I was wondering what was the magic, what was the vision that really kept, you know, people coming back. I also asked the question to a lot of people in the camp, including Tim Berners-Lee and everyone. I think the key thing that I really heard mostly is friendship. It was always because they do realize people connection are so important, is so important. And that is so powerful as well, because you, when you have the right connection, when you have the right people together, you can accomplish so many great things together without the hurdles of your, you know, geographical, you know, boundaries or, you know, government rules or centralized, you know, arbitrary rules. That's exactly the thing they are building on, and that's the thing they are, you know, propelled by. And that's also why we're doing social. I was really enlightened for those conversations as well.
I really want to leave this as a final comment, because that was brilliant to close up. But let me ask you another question. Okay. Like Threads had, or what people said it would have, is this portable graph as well. Yep. when you see that this established platform taking such step, how are you thinking about that?
First of all, I think it's a good sign that people are moving towards that way and people are recognizing, acknowledging that is a real demand from users. Also, you know, falling from all those bad news from all those, you know, centralized platforms, that's one. And secondly, actually, when Facebook and Meta through Threads and trying to go to decentralized social, that promise was to integrate with Fediverse, you know, ActivityPub, which is exactly one of the protocols or project developed by the DeWeb people, like the people I was mentioning. They are truly going to the decentralized way if that promise is like fulfilled. For CyberConnect, especially with our V3 upgrades, as I mentioned, we're really moving towards something that is more ready for mass adoption. And we're really not only focusing on the crypto maximalist approach of only catering for the crypto native people. Mm. We're really thinking about the mass people. How can we onboard them? How can we give the benefits to them? So we're using ERC-457, account abstraction, virtual login social recovery, and multi-chain approach. By going that way, we are also moving a little closer to have the possibility of integrating with the web protocols as well, including Fediverse, including Threads. If Threads could be part of our partners, potentially, CyberConnect itself as a social graph protocol, a social network protocol, and also focus on the identity account part, we can be the account universal holistic account system that get every other protocols or social data mapped together. But we can be the one that is the easiest for the users to manage, to create, and to own as an account, as an identity. But the data itself and the social connections can actually come from outside of CyberConnect. It can come from Fediverse, it can come from Threads, it can come from some other protocols. But the account itself, as you mentioned, our users, they naturally need to want to have one or at least no more than two or three central accounts that they know that is theirs and that is easy enough to use. So on that front, we're making a huge move and we're making it much easier to accomplish. To wrap up, I think it's good they're moving towards this way because that generates a lot of traffic and a lot of recognition about Web3 social and as a decentralized social. For two, I think potentially we don't have to worry too much because as long as people are using decentralized social, it's decentralized and that's good for everyone. And for three, for the things we are building on, actually it's compatible and it's very likely and also we're looking forward to that, to really integrating all those different protocols, different kind of like data systems together under cyber accounts. That's why we're so excited about our V3. That's why we are really leading the way of account abstraction in the whole internet and the whole Web3. We might have more conversations with DeWeb people, with decentralized social outside of crypto together to think how we can better enable users.
Exciting times coming up. So great developments and best of luck with onboarding. The next few millions would be good, right? We're not talking a billion.
Let's say 10 million first.
Yeah. 10 million at a time.
Okay.
Best of luck. It was a great conversation. Really appreciate it. Great that we could meet in Tokyo as an extension of WebEx Asia. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you, Nober. Thank you for having me.